Do we have the any kind of audio?
No, I'll put it in later.
Okay.
That's okay.
All right.
Daring to be stupid. Daring to be stupid.
That is not the song.
I was thinking that too when I heard this.
Hello and welcome to the Greaties, the great 80s movie debate. If you're a child of the 80s or just a movie geek, join us as we take a look at some of the movies from the 80s and see if they hold up today.
Holy shit, we're off the rails.
I'm confused.
Damn you all.
You're doing great. You're doing great. Just keep moving.
Subject of today's show. We're going to chug along. The subject of today's show is 1984's Johnny Dangerously, starring Michael Keaton, Joe Piscopo, and Marilu Henner. And joining, I'm Christy, and joining us today are Matt.
We recorded 12 episodes of The Greaties in a year once. Once.
And Dave.
This is so awesome. I just love sitting here listening to people struggle. Just keep going. You're doing great.
And Chris.
I saw Christy take a shit on Matt's chest once. Once.
Oh my God.
What the hell? Jesus.
Where did that come from?
Seriously.
I couldn't wait to talk about something disgusting.
That's a Cleveland steamer. That's what that is.
Once.
It's called an Orlando Sunshine down here.
Whoa. Rusty Notebook. I don't know.
Rusty
okay.
Notebook.
Rusty, I was going to tell you to say someone else's name.
Oh, no. Rusty Notebook. Okay, so so let's take a poll and see how everybody experienced this movie. Matt,
I get a poll.
I figure, Matt.
She wants to take your poll.
What's your history? I'm gonna beat you with the poll. All right, so take Matt, what's your experience with this?
Horrible. That's my experience with that. My original experience was I could not wait to get my hands on this movie when it came out on video because my parents wouldn't let me see it in the theaters because I guess it was one of the first PG-13 movies. But by the time it came out on video, I guess they found out what it was all about. And I could not wait to see this. And I remember renting it from the good old Video Connection in Quakertown, PA.
Oh, yeah.
And watching it on my VHS and... Then we watched it here.
And Chris.
I used to watch this thing nonstop on cable, HBO Prism or something. It was always on. I would watch it. I guess I was 11. Yeah, 11 or 12. And I thought it was hysterical. And the non-curse words made me pee a little bit. And I really had a good time watching it back then.
Well, and Dave?
Yeah, I used to watch it on cable too. And I guess I didn't even realize this at the time, and I was really made aware of it watching it this time, how much this is like the Zucker Abrams Zucker movies, like and like the things that were like real meta and stuff like that. I don't even think I realized that when I was watching it when I was little. Like one of the first things is it says that it takes place in 1935 and the car runs over the words.
Oh, yeah.
And
they, yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing that would have been right out of one of those other kind of movies. And I guess I never put two and two together, like, that was trying to be like that. Like, I guess at that point, Airplane and Top Secret and stuff had already been out. And I'm like, wondering now as an adult, were they trying to do that? Like, were they trying to emulate those guys? But when I was younger, I did really think it was funny. I mean, and for some reason, the line about his last name being an adverb. Yeah. Always stuck out to me when I was little because we had learned that in school, like, you know, whatever grade that was, it was like, we learned what adverbs are. And I was like, and then I got the joke. I was like, I learned something in school, you know, like, I don't know why that joke always stuck out to me. But I remember laughing a lot at it. Like everybody has seemed to so far. What about you, Christy?
I remember this. I think I've used this movie on several of our top fives. Because I do adore this movie. This is up there with Revenge of the Nerds and Porky's. but I think it was HBO. It used to be on all the time. And I caught it. And I just remember thinking there were so many little inside jokes and so many things that every time I'd watch it, I'd find something new. And I'd see something I missed. And one thing in retrospect now, as an adult looking at this, realizing that this was actually directed by Amy Heckerling.
Yeah.
And normally you don't associate, not to be sexist or anything, but you don't associate female directors with this kind of humor.
Right. And I was trying to see, I don't know why I was having trouble getting on IMDb while we're watching this. Had she done anything else? I didn't get that answer while we're watching.
Oh,
anything
yeah.
we'd know. I mean, I'm sure she's done other things, but anything we would know of note.
Yeah. She directed Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
And she also did European Vacation.
Wow.
I think she also directed at least the first Look Who's Talking, and then her other big thing was Clueless.
Wow.
So she's had like a pretty good career. And there's, I mean, I kept noticing as we were watching, and Matt already kind of talked about the one before we start recording. There's little Fast Times at Ridgemont High people that pop up a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
And every time one did, I like wrote it down.
With a smiley face.
I recorded my smiley faces.
Oh, that's good.
I'm not going to tell you how many there are until the end.
Okay.
So,
well, I will tell you right now, I had, what, three?
You had four audibles.
Four genuine laughs, and that was it.
I didn't care. I was still
enjoying. I can even list them.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to list them.
Right. What's with the trailer? You already started talking about this trailer. I never saw that trailer until you put it on the end of the last episode. You put the trailer on the end of the Highlander episode.
Right.
And I listened to it and I was like, what is this? This is the worst trailer of all time.
That's like the first trailer for the movie.
Yeah,
the
first one
released.
Really?
Yes. That's really it. That is Joe Piscopo in his character's outfit, whatever his character's name was, Danny Vile, something like that.
Danny Verman.
And Danny Verman talking about Michael Keaton being Johnny Dangerously. And yeah, it's worse to explain than the watch.
He just kind of like narrates the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What an unbelievable. And then the Weird Al song is going on in that. And then the thing. And they're so proud of the fact that Weird Al is doing the song. They even mentioned it in the trailer. It's like, you know, Johnny Dangerously, and at the end they're like, theme song by Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
Yay.
I have to say, as it was starting, I was singing the whole thing.
Now, yeah. I'm a big Weird Al fan, don't get me wrong. We've seen him twice. Oh, no, some once. I no, saw him twice.
I saw him once.
Yeah, so and me too. So we've seen him twice in concert. We always get his albums, all the downloads now, and I love UHF, but I don't want to hear him in anything else except something he's in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's him. Save him for his stuff. I don't want him in opening a movie that doesn't star him. If it stars him, fine, but he's not even in it.
I paid him $60 for his autograph, I think, 5-6 months ago.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I met him. He signed the Anakin, like his Anakin pose.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Did you put it in your Star Wars museum?
I do. I did. I will.
Did you? You should frame that and put it on the wall.
I wanted to. I just haven't got a frame yet.
That's actually a good idea. That's like a kind of like a one of a kind Star Wars item that most people wouldn't have.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see your problem. Frames are hard to come by.
I got like a bunch. I got like 10 here. I got to frame up. But back to the trailer. One of the coolest things on this new Xfinity Comcast thing, you could go to any movie. And it says, watch trailer.
Yeah, you can do that on Apple TV, too.
And it was that trailer. And then I said, hell, I watched the Die Hard, the Lethal Weapon, the Cobra, all the original trailers, all grainy and blurry. Right. It was so awesome to watch.
That's funny. You're like excited about Johnny Dangerously because you get to watch Die Hard trailers.
I got to say, I watched all these trailers. I watched Lethal Weapon 1, 2, 3, and 4 trailers all in a row. Yeah, it was so cool.
It's like watching mini versions of the movie, so you didn't have to dedicate an entire hour.
That's how I did this podcast.
I wish we did that for this podcast.
That's why trailers are so great. They're just like, it's like a shortened version of the movie. I don't need to watch the movie. I just watch a trailer.
Remember, not
Johnny Dangerously. It's awful trailer.
It is an awful Dave, trailer.
Didn't you make a movie of trailers?
Oh yeah,
back in the day.
I had, back when there was 35mm film and you had to splice everything together, I collected trailers for years. I mean, for like a decade.
Yeah, yeah.
And would splice them all together on a platter to make I don't know. It was at least two and a half hours.
Two and a half hours.
2.5 hours of just trailers. And every once in a while, it'd be like, fire it up. And fire it up and sit there and just watch 2.5 hours of trailers, like old stuff to new stuff to whatever. Yeah. They're the best part of the movie. You might as well not even stay for the movie.
Except for this one.
Except for this one. Look at you trying to bring it back to Johnny Dangerously.
Well, I do have a point here. Because I like this movie. That's why I'm hosting. So, okay. So let's talk about
Alan Hale.
Johnny Dangerously. So we start, it's a bit of a period piece.
Yeah.
It's an anachronistic period piece. But the year is 1935.
If you mean it made me want to bleed between my legs, you might be right.
Whoa.
Sorry.
I was thinking,
channeling Chris again.
As soon as you said the word period, that's the first thing I thought it was string.
They should have put that on the trailer.
Made me want to hang myself with a cotton string, yes.
That's awful but funny.
I can see where
it's
we're
awful
going.
Awful funny.
I got to pull out my string now.
Bing.
Yeah, there's Tim's sound effect.
It's not a pop. It's a Tim sound effect.
Yeah.
All right, so it's 1935, damn it.
Yes, good year.
Yes, and we're introduced to Michael Keaton as a pet shop owner as he catches a young boy shoplifting a puppy.
Yes. Oh, cute puppy.
Aww.
There were a lot of cute animals, I have to say.
There was.
Couple of seconds, every time it went back to the pet shop, it just kept going, aw, aw, aw. So
three awes out of five.
So in order to discourage this kid from a life of crime, he decides to start telling his story, and we get a bit of a dissolve, which is acknowledged right there.
It was
giving us the beginning to this story.
What do you call jokes like that, like in storytelling, like that are self-referential? I mean, is that just what they're called?
Yeah, self-referential. Yeah. Lame.
Stop it. It's not lame. It was funny.
Well, you love it when the, you know, Zucker Abrams, Zucker brothers and shit do it.
They do it funny, though.
That reminded me of mood lighting a little bit, like when you talk to the camera sometimes.
Yeah.
Haziness.
I know they call it breaking the third wall.
That's kind of breaking the third wall, although he didn't talk to the audience, but it is acknowledging something's being seen by the audience in a sense, I guess.
I was just curious if they had a technical term.
It probably does.
Story writing.
There it is, just about for every kind of story joke element, there is a term. I don't know it.
So we go back to 1910, and young Johnny Kelly is a newsboy on the corners of the streets of New York, and he ends up beating up Danny Vermin, who steals his corner in self-defense, but he gets seen by Jocko Dundee. His fighting prowess is seen by Jocko Dundee. And he offers...
Frankenstein?
Yes, okay. That would be Peter Boyle.
Raymond.
Being driven around by Dick Butkus.
There was some weird cameos like Dick Butkus in this.
It was very eclectic with the cameos.
Did you know these characters' names, or did you have to go look them up?
I have them written down.
I mean, when you saw it, like, did you know when what's his face walked? Like, what's the actor's name? Peter
Boyle?
Peter Boyle. Did you know his character's name?
No.
Because you've seen this so many times? Okay.
No, it's mainly the main characters, like Johnny and Vermin and Tommy and Ma Kelly. That stuff I remember.
Okay.
But I do have the rest of it written down.
Ma Kelly, I will say this, that character ended up being funnier than I remembered.
Oh, yeah.
She, I got a lot of laughs out of her, too. She was a highlight. Stapleton.
Yeah. I don't want to jump ahead. Sorry.
Okay. So, pretty much he offers Johnny $50, but he doesn't want to do it because if it involves breaking the law, he'll break his mama's heart. But when he goes back in, he finds out that his mother needs the first of what are many very strange medical surgery needs. This time it's her pancreas. And we're introduced to his little brother, Tommy, who is coloring in a law book.
Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, he's coloring.
That's cute. And inside a law book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
He's coloring Oliver Wendell Holmes purple.
A little too subtle joke there.
Yeah. And then we find out that Johnny and Tommy's father, Ma Kelly's husband, was a criminal and he was executed, as we can tell by the picture of him sitting on the electric chair right at the table. So, realizing that he's got to find some way to pay for his mom's surgery, he decides to go and do the job for Jocko Dundee, which pretty much involves him helping out Dundee's gang rob a nightclub owned by Dundee's rival Roman Maroney.
There's a clever joke in that scene that I couldn't possibly have gotten the first time I saw this movie. The Ma Kelly scene where it was her birthday and Johnny goes, "How's it feel to be 29?" I'm like, "Oh, that's funny." He's flattering her, and she goes, "If I only make it to 30," I'm like, "Oh shit, she is really 29." That was pretty clever. I can't imagine I got that 20 years ago.
Now, then once you pass 30, you kind of understand.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah.
There was a joke I wrote down, because I did write down every time I laughed, and some of the jokes did fall short, but some of them, like, and like the way you said that, Matt, there is a joke that I probably couldn't have possibly gotten when I was younger, but seeing it as an adult, it was like the reverse thing. Like, a lot of these things get worse as you get older.
Right.
This got better. It's really one of the best written jokes in any movie we've reviewed. And there, it was something that they're talking about, some kind of immigrant act. They're setting the scene some kind of immigrant act that the Italians and the Irish were coming over to America, and that the immigrant act meant that they walked around in the streets with hats on.
For at least an hour a day.
They all moved in. They all had to move into two city blocks or something like that. Yeah.
And walk around in the streets with hats on. And that's the whole scene. It's just guys walk around with, like, hats.
Yeah.
Which is, like, every like, footage you see from, like, the 30s.
Yeah.
There's no way I got that when I was young. And I was sitting there, and I did smile. I didn't, like, laugh out loud. I smiled. But I wrote it down because it was, like, that is a really sophisticated joke.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's better now than it would have been then. And it's a really well-written joke.
Yeah.
So.
Too bad it was shoehorned in with a bunch of other crap.
So we meet Roman Maroney, who probably is one of the most memorable characters from this movie because of his mutilation of the English language, most notably in all the swear words.
That didn't really make me laugh out loud, but I did find it fun when he would talk. That was not, and I thought that was, you would think that would get old, but for me it did make me smile every time he spoke.
You know what's weird is, like, I was telling Dave earlier today, like, 11, 12 years old, that was hysterical.
Yeah.
Cork sucker, you know, ice holes, hysterical. But I watched it again, and I'm thinking, why not just curse? You know what I mean? Like, now I'm like, it makes me smile, but not as it did when I was 12 or 13.
I probably laughed at it for a completely different reason. I was laughing at it because I was assuming he was getting the words wrong, being not American born. That was a joke that, like, made me laugh. I think it was I think I got a totally different laugh out of it this time. If I had laughed, but a smile.
I wonder how hard it was for the actor himself to, hey, don't say cocksucker, say corksucker.
Yeah.
Don't say farkin. You know, fucking say farkin. I wonder if it was hard. If you ever slipped while he was filming it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
What kind of fascinates me is probably the amount this guy swears incorrectly.
Yeah.
Would have put him in, like, deep R territory.
Yeah. They did it to save PG-13. And what's funny on him is his eyebrow. I have more of that than I do at the cursing, I think, actually.
I have to say, I remember as a kid thinking this was so cool that I could get away with swearing. And I'd be like, oh, you fargin' ice hole. just like, oh, Mom, I didn't call you anything.
This actually builds up to another almost actually probably sophisticated joke, or at least a setup for a very long commitment to a joke, kind of in the realm what Dave was talking about. I won't tell the joke yet, but I'll say at this point, I'm trying to figure out what the hell nationality is. And that plays into a joke much later in the movie.
Which one is that?
The newspaper one.
Oh, whoa, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Sweden.
Oh, you want to tell the joke? Yeah.
Yes.
It says, Richard Maroney sent back to Sweden, claims that's not where he's from.
That is funny.
Even just the one time in the newspaper in the show, the headlines that it just says Fargan War. Yeah. Right after he says it. And that Krista and I did have this conversation. Like, it's like, it's not as funny as it was when we were little, but it still makes you smile.
Yes.
And I remember talking like that too. Everybody did. I think I still do that every once in a while. You call someone a bastage.
Yeah.
Summon a bitch.
Fargan sneaky bastage. And you don't even probably know why you're doing it. But it's like in your head.
I forgot about corksucker. That I had to use.
Yeah, that's hysterical, corksucker.
Yeah, I got a smile still.
So we go back to the story. So years pass by, and Johnny becomes an adult, and he becomes Michael Keaton.
And yes.
Starts listen, working. Yes. I want to know why Michael Keaton and Joe Piscopo's guyliner is not listed as a separate character. That's the one thing I kept looking, going, they're wearing eyeliner, aren't they?
A lot.
That is thick.
There is some matte makeup on these men.
I think between scenes, when he rubbed his eyes too hard and it smeared all over, someone got the idea for the Batman mask.
You want to get nuts?
Hey, let's get nuts.
I will always picture that picture you put on Facebook of him and the Joker in a nut shop scooping out nuts, saying, "Want to get nuts? Let's get nuts."
I love that. One of my favorite lines.
Do you think that Christy brought this up? I didn't even dawn on me until you just said that, how much eyeliner they have on. Is that like a nod to like old movies where like they would really put the heavy makeup on everybody, just almost like stage makeup to like make them stand out? Like, do you think it was intentional?
I have to think it somewhat is, because, I mean, it's really obvious on Maroney.
Mm.
And definitely, I mean, you can't tell me Johnny and
most of the girls, at least the supporting actresses, not so much Mary Lou Henner and the brother's girlfriend, they had kind of like the white powdered faces with the blush cheeks too, like they had in the old timey movies, whatever period that is.
Yeah, the movie could have almost been black and white.
Yeah,
like them and Don't Wear Plaid. Like it was like shot in a way that it was supposed to make it look old fashioned, and that's the way guys looked in those old movies. So they took it to that extreme.
You forgot your pajamas. Okay, that's
Keaton's accent, though. I mean, I know Chris loves him, and I love Michael Keaton too.
I love him.
His accent through the whole thing is great. He totally nails like the James Cagney.
Yeah.
Thing that just the way he cocks his head, and his head's on a swivel the whole time. He's doing James Cagney to a T, and I really enjoyed watching him do that.
I did like him in this.
Did you actually like watch him walk? Like he would bounce.
Oh yeah. Yes,
he was walking. He would like cock his head.
He had swagger.
Yes, he was. He's the movie.
He had tons of swagger, and that's the way James Cagney would do in his old movies. Because James Cagney was such a great dancer, he was so light on his feet that he was almost always dancing when he was just walking. Yeah. And Keaton is doing that perfectly.
Keaton's great.
This is the second Michael Keaton thing I've seen in I think 2 months, and I had this discussion with Chris over text messages. The other one was RoboCop, which Michael Keaton is the only thing we're seeing in that piece of shit movie. and I had said to him, I was like, I forget how much I like him. I wish he was in more stuff. Now, this Birdman trailer, have you guys seen that?
Did you see that?
Yeah. So I'm glad to see he is in more stuff. But I always, Michael Keaton, he takes so long between movies, I think, that I forget how much I like him.
Love him.
And I don't think he ever fully got the recognition for being as freaking funny as he is just by being deadpan.
Oh yeah.
It's when he does nothing that he gets really funny.
Yeah, he just kind of cocks his head and kind of like has his mouth. I mean, he's like mouth breathing through a lot of it. He's got like that kind of like shit eating, like tough guy.
Kind of
like, yeah, kind of like, yeah, like he's always smacking his lips, and he's perfect. Yeah. He's really perfect in it.
So we get to know that Michael Keaton, as Johnny Dangerously, has become a full-time employee for the Dundee gang. And he becomes kind of undercover in his regular day. I kind of love it when he goes into the neighborhood and goes, "All right, everybody, gather around. Yeah. He pretty much says, "Now, what do we remember? That when you're home, you're Johnny Kelly, not the infamous Johnny Dangerously." And there's an appearance by the Pope. Well, Dom DeLuise.
Yeah. Dom DeLuise.
Yeah, he's that was unnecessary.
He just is, I find him just so overbearing. It just you want to just say, would you take it down seven notches, pal?
Good thing. And he's I guess good.
This is like still like when Dom DeLuise and Burt Reynolds were celebrities. Like, because why would he? I mean, why? Because why would he be in this?
He was kind of an unnecessary.
At this point in his career, it seems to me when I see him, apart from Cannonball Run, it always seems like he. It has this air about him that just being on set should be all he needs to do and doesn't really try, and his delivery is so just off-putting to me. I at this point of his career, I don't enjoy him at all.
No.
So we learned that his little brother Tommy, Griffin Dunn, played by Griffin Dunn, is now in law school with a girlfriend. And pretty much he's decided that he wants to drop out of law school so that he can get a job, marry his girlfriend, and get laid.
The only quote I remembered from this movie going into it. I know why you want to get married. You want to get laid. You want to hump your brains out.
Boom, ba, boom, ba, boom, ba. So
I cannot stand Griffin Dunn. He is like possibly one of the worst actors ever. What has he done that's any good?
what has Griffin Dunn done?
Seriously. Who's that girl?
Who's that girl?
American Werewolf in London? Okay. So back to Johnny Dangerously.
Amazing Stories.
So
Sam the Man.
Then
Snow Angels.
Thank you. Johnny shows his brother a public health film to try and get him back into law school.
I do remember that, though.
Your you know testicles and you.
Do you know what's sad about this? Is my son watched this movie with me. He watched this movie, but he, I don't think he really caught on to what it was. I was looking. Okay. I had one eye on the TV and one eye on him. Shit.
Dave, you channeled Chris.
Yeah. And he didn't really get, he just thought it was just like a cartoon thing. He didn't know exactly what it was, but I did laugh at that. I laughed at that. But the first thing I laughed at, which I think we passed, was Michael Keaton in the closet with the laundry.
Oh, yes. I laughed at that one and Matt looked at me like, why did you just laugh at that?
When the laundry took him down and he fell, like Jim Carrey style, gone, I laughed out loud. I rewound that scene, actually. Watch it again.
I remember laughing my ass off at that health video when I first saw this movie.
This how about time? Now?
No, not so much.
Yeah, I
was like, Matt, what did that video, was that video supposed to stop you from, or what is this trying to teach me?
You don't know your testicles in you.
I guess not.
That they explode like balloons, apparently. But Johnny gets him back to go to law school. And then we find out that there's still a running feud with Maroney, and he's taken on two new gang members. Danny Vermin, who is now played by the adult, Joe Piscopo, and his sidekick, Dutch. And Danny has pretty much remained a dick and a scumbag with a taste for using opera audiences as shooting galleries with his 88 Magnum pistol.
That's what it is, an 88?
It's an 88.
Oh, that's good to know.
And it's specially made.
It shoots through schools.
You do a really good Joe Piscopo.
You do. Piscopo and Belly. Come on.
I'll think of something along the way.
At this point, was Joe Piscopo a cast member on Saturday Night Live?
I think so.
I believe so, because he was early 80s. With Eddie Murphy.
This is when he was still funny. It wasn't until he got all jacked up that he loses his sense of humor. Apparently steroids shrinks your balls and your sense of humor.
Because the only things that I remember him being, he was in this and he was in The Wrong Guys.
Like, wasn't he in a movie with an alien person? Like a cop movie. It was him?
Yes. It was with a zombie. And it was called Dead Heat.
That's it. And a zombie.
Yep.
You're right.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I remember him from that movie and Dangerously.
I never got him. I mean, like, he was funny on Saturday Night. He did good impressions. His Sinatra was really good.
Yeah.
He did some good stuff. this is one guy that never made the leap.
No, not at all.
Like even before, like I know he's supposed to be funny in this with the once and you know all that kind of stuff. He's to me a low point of this movie.
Though I have to say, I do remember quite using that quote a lot, like saying you shouldn't do this to me.
Yeah.
So and so did it to me once.
Once. Yeah.
So, pretty much, we have the appearance of the Moroni robot, which I don't understand. They send him in with a machine gun to try and knock off the gang. He doesn't get anybody, but Johnny decides to retaliate by dropping a bomb from a biplane as Moroni's going, oh, we take down this wall here and we take down this boom. So pretty much he helped him with his construction. And the two gangs go to complete war, which I find it funny that Lil drives him in a topless car and then he has to dodge everything just getting across the street.
Yeah.
So, and I, as we, speaking of meeting Lil Sheridan, Matt seemed to remember the one joke that he remembered liking. You got those. Oh. I like those in a woman.
Oh, I didn't make me laugh, but I remembered the joke.
Yeah, you did.
Yes. Who knew she was that pretty? She was pretty good looking back then.
I've always found Mary Lou Henner pretty, but not hot.
Yeah, you're
always
right.
I always thought she was pretty.
And doesn't she have that thing where she knows everything about her life?
Like hypermethalgia or something, I forget what his name is. She remembers everything. You ever see that 60 Minutes special with her on it?
I saw clips of it, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's creepy. That's creepy, but it's
bizarre.
Yes.
Her other thing is like she's like a health food nut. And
she is now, yeah.
And her goal is to have you make healthy poops.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Did you ever see that thing? She does this thing where, like, according to her, when you poop, it should float because that means you're eating healthy. So she writes cookbooks to have you have floating poops.
There's a lot of styrofoam.
she's good in this, though. I mean, like, I loved her on Taxi, and she never really did that much else. Like, I wonder why. She's got talent.
I think she was a singer and dancer before this. But we get to meet each other, and we get the famous line of, do you know your last name is an adverb?
Adverb.
And they go for a long walk together, and they keep going.
That made me laugh. How are we?
Where the hell are we?
That was very Zaz-like. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I wrote that down with a smiley face as well.
That was funny.
The long walk.
That's what I wrote, Dave. Long walk.
Look at that. Christy's favorite joke has got to be coming up soon. If you don't mention this, I am quitting the show right now.
I know what it is exactly, I think.
She better. I'm giving her one chance to mention this.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so now with that pressure. Moroni then decides to continue the war. It's after this, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Sends a plumber to plant explosives in Dundee's toilet. And he gets scared because the toilet explodes and he comes out and he keeps crying, I have no will to live. My dork is in my hands. Ends up being the handle for the toilet. That just makes me laugh. So he decides.
So you need to know that toilets used to have chain pulls to get that joke.
True.
True. You're
There's right. a lot of knowledge you need to know about history going into this movie.
Right.
You can't be a history idiot and watch this movie.
The hell was that?
Is that the wind?
No, I think lightning man outside, man. Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. Oop. Make it fast. Go.
Okay. So he decides to retire and hand over the reins to Johnny. And then we have the running gag with Ray Walston as the newsstand, where he gets hit in the head with the newspapers. And he's blind. He's there with the little tiny round glasses. And he gets hit in the head. This is the first instance of this. Hey, I can see. I can see. And somebody says, is that the Daily Edition? What? And so now he's lost his hearing.
And Matt hates this.
Hey, this is not funny. It's like the old. That is literally possibly the oldest joke in the book. A blind guy getting hit in the head and getting his sight back, and then but something else happens. Usually, now this is a twist, a variation on it. Usually, he gets hit in the head immediately again and loses his sight. So this is a twist, but it's still the oldest fucking joke in the book.
But then he gets hit again, and he can. I can hear. I can see. But who am I?
It gets funnier. See that, Matt? It gets funnier.
Threesies go
through. Sure does.
All right. So meanwhile, Tommy graduates from law school. And Johnny's ready for him to go to some cushy lawyer gig. But no, Tommy decides that he has got to work against crime, not realizing that his brother is pretty much the poster child for crime.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. So he decides that he's going to, if he's going to go work for the DA, he's going to make sure that the DA, who is Danny DeVito, in a very odd role.
Yeah, seriously.
Very strange role.
He's one of the weirdest parts of this movie, because I think, at least I know, I think all four of us are pretty big fans, like especially with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and stuff like that. Like, this guy to me is a comedy legend.
Yeah.
And he is so wasted in this movie. Like, he doesn't do anything. They don't do anything for me. Just that weird thing with that game show.
Yeah.
That's right. I already forgot about that.
He's so wasted in this. Does he do anything funny? Like, he's really kind of just like a straight character.
He could have been played by anybody. It did not have to be Danny DeVito.
So disappointing. Like, I remember, like, at any time Danny DeVito's or something, I'm like, great. So disappointed to see that this is what it was. I hadn't remembered that. It is weird. It's really strange. You're right.
Especially when he makes the moves on Johnny, and it's kind of like, I don't feel comfortable with this.
What's going on there?
But so he's on the payroll. He's on the take. And he tries to get Tommy into his court by playing ball.
That's the game show. Yeah.
That's the game show. Yeah. Did you notice that the one thing that, like, he's like that he can win a house? Did you see what the picture of the house was?
It's like, you know, it was something.
Yeah, it was
Washington,
like a monument.
Right?
It was the White House or something, isn't it?
The Philadelphia Art Museum.
Oh, what is oh,
which is weird. And I don't know that people that aren't from Philadelphia or that haven't seen Rocky would know that that's the Philadelphia Art Museum, but that's the house that they say he can live in.
Yeah.
That whole thing is like so stupid, and it's so bizarre. Now I'm getting angry.
No, don't get angry. Yes. Don't get angry.
Lower the score. Lower the score.
Did we pass by your favorite quote yet?
No, I know what it is.
Oh, okay.
I'm getting there. So he decides.
Let's draw this out.
He decides he's not gonna play ball. He's like, no, I'm gonna do it, and then I'm gonna send you to jail. So pretty much, the DA cuts the brakes on Tommy's car.
I laughed a lot at this part.
She did too, and I just looked at her.
Because I've said this plenty of times.
Oh my God.
It's so funny, and it keeps falling. Oh my God. I laughed at that.
Yeah, I did too. I was sitting there doing it with him. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. So he's badly injured, and they go to visit him in the hospital, and he's a total body cast, and Ma Kelly writes on his side of his cast.
She's reliving this movie with
She's
such glee.
Up.
So after he recovers, after Tommy recovers, part of what reason they decide to kill Tommy is because he's decided to go after Johnny Dangerously. But nobody knows who Johnny Dangerously is, and there are speculations, especially in one of the newspaper articles.
Here it comes.
Which is a sketch of Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah!
There it is.
That's
who is?
It.
Is this Johnny Dangerously? No.
It looks like a Rocky III, a Rocky III pose or something.
That is the Rocky III poster.
Yeah.
And I hadn't remembered that, and I'm watching, I was like, that's why Christy loves this movie.
No! Christy loves the movie before this scene and after this scene.
There's a Stallone joke. Come on.
This one just hangs in the balance.
Did you laugh?
I went, oh, Dave's going to make a comment about this one.
Yeah, she did. She was still laughing from, oh my God.
Oh my God.
I'm just glad you acknowledged that there is a Stallone joke in this movie.
Yes,
oh, good. There should be at least one more Grady's episode to come now.
Maybe.
So they get married in the courthouse, and pretty much Johnny's decided to go legit so that he doesn't have to put so his brother doesn't have to find out. But of course, Vermin follows them to the courthouse and sees that Johnny and Tommy are brothers. And as Tommy and his wife now are kind of bonking it in the same place, in the closest location they can, which is a janitor's closet.
I like that.
Vermin actually says, Johnny dangerously is Tommy Kelly's brother. So, of course, he has to stop and go after Johnny. In which case, he does vow to Tommy that he's going to go legit.
What does the janitor say when he goes in
there? Oh, sweet Jesus.
No, he says, hallelujah.
Oh, yeah.
God.
That was funny.
No, it wasn't.
So Johnny comes back to the gang in the smoke-filled room and tells him, I got to go legit. To which Vermin explains that the reason he's going legit is because Tommy Kelly is the DA. And Johnny pretty much says, look, guys, I'm gonna fess up, but only about me. I'm not going to turn you in. And he decides he's going to go turn in all the evidence to the crime commissioner. He goes in that night. Oh, I must mention, too, that when he gets the reins from, what's his face? Jocko Dundee. Jocko gives him the cigarette case that saved his life.
Right.
It's the MacGuffin of this
at the beginning. He gets it, and of course, Johnny does a whole thing about PSA right then about how smoking can kill you.
Oh,
and how you should chew gum. And you find out that that's what he keeps in.
You look dumb. You want to put something in your mouth? Chew a piece of gum, like Johnny does.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a commercial? Like, not only is it just a joke within the movie, but isn't that also spoofing a commercial that was on then?
I think it sounds
familiar. It does.
I think there was a commercial that was on aimed at like us when we were that age.
Yeah, where it
was
like somebody didn't work for one of us.
Where it was like somebody was supposed to be cool. Like, you want to put something in your mouth? Try a stick of chewing gum. You know, it was like one of those kind of like crappy PSAs. I think it was that scene is kind of spoofing that too. I'm going to have to YouTube that or something. I bet, you know, people put old commercials on all the time. I love watching old commercials.
I learned by watching you, Dad.
Yeah, it's like one of those kind of commercials. I think that was an existing commercial.
I think you're right, because it does seem vaguely familiar. So then Johnny goes to turn himself in, but when he gets there, he finds out that the crime commissioner has been killed by Vermin, and they knock Johnny out and put his hand around the gun, and then Vermin steals his bubblegum case. So Johnny's arrested for murder, takes some very photogenic pictures.
Walks into the door. I left then.
That was number three of my four left.
Yeah. Okay.
Pow, pow. Boonk. That was more of a visual. Okay. So Tommy decides he's going to try the case where Johnny keeps saying, I'm innocent and the guilty party's got my bubblegum case. And then when Vermin congratulates Tommy, he realizes that Johnny's innocent because he sees the case. and they all realize that Johnny didn't do it.
He is one hell of a suit, though, in jail. I'll tell you that.
Yes.
It's love that thing.
Turned up collar.
I love it.
And we meet Mary Margaret, the cleaning lady. We meet her again. She's there when they commit the crime. And I really kind of laugh at this little investigating or interviewing thing that Ma Kelly does with her. He goes, we're both lookers and we're not Chinese.
Well, you've done your homework.
That was good.
And the best thing is when she said, how much will it cost you to be silent? 15,842. And then this one is 19,000.
It was 17 the first time, 19.5 the second. Let's not exaggerate the numbers here.
Somebody best part of this episode is hearing Christy do the the accents of all the different characters.
I just can't repeat anything the cleaning woman says because
you're like listening to Dave Coulier.
Cut it out.
She just threw something at me. Is that cool?
That was visual too.
Yes, that was poop. Visual. So
did it float? Did it float?
Yeah. She's flinging poo.
Shh. So let's eat.
Let's eat. All right.
Okay. So Tommy finally goes after Vermin, and he decides he has to kill Tommy. So this is one of the other places I really laugh is when he's in jail. The warden is kind of a fan.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets it through the. He tells Lil when he's having his meeting with her that to be on Vermin's good side to find out what's going on. So she finds out that Vermin's going to kill Tommy at the Savoy Theater while they're watching a Jimmy Cagney movie. He's watching it with the governor. So she tells it to Polly, the ever-present parrot. And they proceed to spread it through the prison grapevine, which is pretty much like a game of telephone in elementary school where one thing turns into another. So it starts out with Vermin's going to kill Tommy's or Johnny's brother at the Savoy. And then it turns into Johnny and the mothers are going to stomping at the Savoy or something like that. And then he recites it back exactly the way it came from Lil. And he said, "That's not what I said." "Yeah, but I know this grapevine." So that just made me laugh. Shut up.
There's only ever been one good grapevine joke, and that was The Simpsons, where they did the whole whisper down the lane, and the end result was exactly the same as it started, but with added, like, purple squishy Zunner boots or something like that. So it's like, all right, maybe that's not a good example.
That was a visual. Okay. So he decides that he's got to plot his escape, and he's, "I'm cracking up. Take me to the chair now.
You want to get nuts?
Let's get nuts."
It's the same voice.
It is.
He does the Johnny Dangerously voice in Batman. We just never knew it. It was, 5 years later?
Brucey Dangerously.
So as he's taking the chair, the fake priest, they're putting together like a Tommy gun from parts from the different inmates.
I remember laughing at the fake Latin then, and then there was this.
You catch the bus, we caught the bus. When's the next bus?
This to me still held up. I'd laughed a lot at this though.
I think it's cute.
I think this is the best part of the movie. And isn't Joe Flaherty in there somewhere?
Yes, he's the one that is. Yeah. Well, that was that before when Johnny
first gets there.
And he's like, "Hey, can we hurry this up?"
Yeah.
I think that still holds up, that fake Latin. "You missed the bus, we missed the bus. What's the next bus?" Yeah, that whole thing I still laughed at.
I did too.
I thought that was good. I think that was one of the bigger laughs of the movie. That and the skipper.
Yes, and he comes up next as they're escaping in a laundry truck. And Alan Hale, the skipper.
Alan Hale Jr.
Oh, excuse me, Alan Hale Jr.
Little buddy.
Is the dispatcher, and he's describing what they're wearing and what they're driving, and they keep changing it because of Lil's addiction to shelf paper.
Oh, you're going to love this one. Duckies and bunnies.
And the next trip, I'm buying. Right.
Anyone in the vicinity of Old Joe's Bar, meet me there. I'm buying.
So eventually, through this car chase...
It's hilarious. You guys have to do just like a whole reenactment of the movie. And Christie's is sincere, and yours is like taking the piss out of it. This is great. We just, Chris and I just shut up, and you guys do it.
No.
Do it.
We're almost done. We're home stretch, guys. Home stretch. Okay. So they get to the theater, And Tommy's is in the audience in the front row, and of course, Vermin cuts a little hole in the screen and decides he's going to shoot Tommy during the one scene where Cagney shoots his gun. But Johnny saves the day and shoots and wounds Vermin, saving Tommy. Governor pardons Johnny, and Vermin is arrested. And now we go back to the pet shop.
Mm.
And the young shoplifter is now taking in the lesson that crime does not pay. And Johnny Kelly, pet shop owner, gives him a kitten.
Which he almost broke the neck on that cat.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, he grabbed that thing and just started twisting.
He was squeezing that thing. It was dead on film, probably.
Oh.
Well, it's dead by now.
Well, yeah. It was a long time ago. And
I'm sad. I like cats.
And Johnny says, crime doesn't pay. Kid goes on the way. Then he gets out into his tux, gets into the limo with Lil Sheridan, where we have the last line. Well, it paid a little.
Right to the camera. That's how I like
right
it.
Right to the camera.
Camera.
Crime.
Crime. Doesn't pay.
And that is Johnny Dangerously.
Yep, that was.
Well done.
Well done.
Trying to think, I told you where my laugh is. What was my first laugh? I forget what that was. Oh, no, I don't remember what that was. I know my one of my early laughs was when Johnny was thinking of going legit. His line is like, people like me, we're all shooting stars. We cross the sky, burning hot for one moment in time, and then we're plugged in Earth and we disappear. Jesus Christ, I'm upsetting myself. And then the mother goes, I don't know what she says. Something like, I think of you like a daughter. I want to tell you something. I go both ways.
I wrote that one down too. That was a big laugh. Yeah. I go both ways.
Probably one that you did not get as a kid.
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah, this movie more than some others, maybe because it was like the 30s thing or whatever. There's no way we got all these jokes.
No. No. I don't think any of our humor was this educated.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a weird script because some of the jokes are really sophisticated and some of them are just like total like bathroom humor or like, you know, just like bottom of the barrel jokes. Mm-hmm. And like Matt said, like even like the thing with the blind guy, it's just like one of those tricks in the book or the pass it down the lane thing. Like some of the jokes are like garden variety and some of them are pretty highbrow. It's like, it's a weird script. Like I looked these guys up. I remember when the guys that wrote it, I think they wrote a couple episodes of Different Strokes.
And it was the one with the child molester.
Yeah. The one where he eats an entire thing of bread with Wonder Bread with sugar on it. That's all I remember. What?
That's from Different That's Strokes?
All I remember. Oh. It's when Arnold ran away from home.
Oh, okay.
And he ate a slice of Wonder Bread with sugar all over it. I was like,
I remember that.
Wait a minute, really?
And Alan Thicke wrote the theme song.
Yes. So
show me that smile.
Show me that smile.
Don't waste another. I know it's Alan Thicke though.
Well,
he didn't write that song.
Don't move.
He just sang it, right?
Just one drum. Yeah,
he didn't even sing it.
No, he didn't. No, he wrote it.
Yeah, he wrote it, Dave.
He wrote it with Gloria Loring.
He did not write the theme song to Growing Pains.
Oh no, he didn't. No, he didn't.
He wrote Different Strokes.
He wrote Different Strokes and Facts of Life.
There you go.
When they start doing writing that song, that goes, hey, 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 hey.
It is nutsack.
Yeah, he started writing it.
My wife has left me.
Oh. So that's Johnny Dangerously. So let's take a poll of...
Poll. Christy wants to take another poll.
Paul! I'm sorry.
And I'm laughing.
It was World Cup fever.
Oh my God!
That sound can be heard coming from the bedroom.
It will now.
So, let's start around the room and see how Johnny Dangerously holds up. Dave.
He's not in the room.
In the virtual room, asshole.
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 All right. Well, in 19, probably, when do you think this was on, Chris? Like on cable, like 85-ish maybe?
It probably was, yeah.
It was like maybe the year after. I would have given this pretty high marks. So probably at least a 3 or maybe even a 4 out of 5. But I can't say for sure. Watching it now, I'm using, and I've used this before and referenced it several times, and I guess I'll continue to, Tim from Star Wars in Character and Pasta Popcorn on NeoZaz has a 10-chuckle rule. Right, Chris?
He does. Yes, he does.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the 10-chuckle rule. If you laugh 10 times in a movie, it's good. If you laugh 10 times, you can honestly say that it is a funny movie. This got 9.
Oh. Was one of them, themes are put on this earth to weakness, drain our energy, and laugh at us when we're naked.
No. Nothing Joe Piscopo.
I'm going through Joe Piscopo's. This poor guy had no funny lines.
No, nothing he did made me laugh. In fact, if he had just done a little something, it would have pushed it over the 10 mark. But I did laugh. I laughed more
you
than
mean
I
you didn't was. Laugh at, I am handicapped. I'm psychotic.
You know what's weird? Let's go. I'm going to talk about that right now. Whenever we go somewhere, Dave, and we park far away, I always say,
let's walk from here. We walk always, from here.
Always. And I have said this handicapped psychotic line also a lot. Probably when I park illegally in handicapped spots, but I have said that line all my life.
Yep.
Do you say it to anyone else, or do you just say it to no one?
All depends if I'm alone or with people.
Then you may be psychotic.
Yeah.
I don't say that, but every time, any theme park we've ever gone to, since we've been married, whenever we park, I always say, we're in the itchy lot.
Yes, you do.
You guys don't get that reference?
No.
Simpsons go to Krusty Land, and they get out of the car and go, remember, we're in the itchy lot. And you see like a million cars and two signs, one that says itchy and one that says scratchy.
Well, this got 9 chuckles. So it came close, and I did like it a lot more than I thought it was. When Christy picked this, I was kind of like, you know, like I wasn't excited to watch it. But seeing it, it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. So I'm going to give it a 2.5 out of 5. I'm gonna split it right down the middle.
Okay.
And to me, that's not a bad score. Like if it had gotten that last laugh, I would have given it a 3, Mr. Piscopo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but 2.5 out of 5 isn't too bad. And if you haven't seen it in a while, I think you'll still get some chuckles out of it. At least, I mean, I did, and it seems like other people did, and Matt doesn't seem to, but. You know, give it a shot. It's five bucks at the store.
You're mentioning Joe Piscopo, like just like it didn't come through. Did you get you guys? I know are not Star Trek fans, but did you know he had a role on Star Trek briefly?
I actually didn't know that.
And he was called The Comic. It was in a sequence in the holodeck, and he was like,
remember that.
And he was the comic. He was teaching the android character how to be funny. But I remember the build up to this, like for months. It's like there's gonna be a comedian featured on Star Trek. We're like, a comedian on Star Trek? How are they gonna do that? Why are they doing that? This is crazy. This is incredible. This is new ground. What are they gonna Joe Piscopo? That's what the reaction was like around the world when the comic was announced as being Joe Piscopo.
Nobody was happy about it.
Nope.
He sucks. I remember one of the best things that's ever been on television. It was the 25th anniversary special of Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he came out, and it was like his joke. He was all buff. He came out in his tuxedo, but the sleeves were cut off.
Yeah. Yes.
And there's a sequence. It's one of the greatest sequences in television history. It has to be. Robin Williams just goes out and riffs on everybody that's sitting there, and he goes through the crowd and tears everyone a new asshole. And one of them's Joe Piscopo. And he takes a shot at him about taking steroids and pumping up and stuff like that. That's what I think about when I think about Joe Piscopo.
Piscopo.
I think of failure.
He had an HBO special that was advertised to the fucking bejesus, and it was like 55 minutes of him talking about how he works out and 5 minutes of attempt at comedy. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, I mean, he was funny on Saturday Night Live, but maybe Eddie Murphy was carrying him like all that time.
Maybe,
like,
yeah.
Like,
who do you think he carried more, Piscopo or Arsenio?
Well, I think Arsenio Hall's talented in some ways. I'm starting to doubt, other than his Frank Sinatra impression, any talent.
The joke I am black that. And you are white.
Yeah, it's good.
That's a funny sketch.
That is funny. It is. Yep. It is.
The lyrics of that song are hilarious. And his Sinatra.
Said I am black and you are white. I got that backwards, didn't I?
You are black and I am white. Yeah.
You are blind as a bat.
It was Stevie. Yeah, because of Stevie sang it. Yeah.
Because then he goes, you're as blind as a bat and I have sight.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It is funny.
He didn't write that.
He didn't write it. Yeah.
He just did a voice.
He's
just like Matt. That's the only reason he's on these shows.
Maybe that's what he is, because although he's not necessarily funny in this movie, he does a good impression. He does the voice well. Maybe he's an impressionist.
Maybe he's like Robert Klein.
Like
Rich Little, Dave's hero.
Yeah, most impressionists, I think, stink because they're not, the impressions are good, but then if there's no writing behind the impression or there's no jokes, then it's just an impression. And maybe he's just a frustrated impressionist that fooled people for a little while to think that he was funny, but I don't get it at all.
So Frank Caliendo is making an entire career out of that. Yep. Impressions with no jokes.
Well, I give this then, I mean, to sum up my thing, 2.5 out of 5. Christy, is that, I mean, are you disappointed? Are you happy with me? I don't want to piss you off.
Dave.
Yes.
I appreciate your vote.
Good.
And I think it's fair. It was a lot better than I thought you were going to give it.
I liked it. 9 out of 10 is not bad.
No.
That's what Meatloaf told me.
It's not really 9 out of 10. I mean, there's 100 jokes in this movie. That's really only 9%. But I'm just saying it wasn't awful.
No,
it's better than a stick in the eye. How about that?
I can take that.
That shit hurts. Yeah, that shit hurts.
Yeah. All right, Chris.
Yes.
Tell me your experience with Johnny Dangerous.
It was lovely. he was crying on my ass.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Michael Keaton, everyone knows I love him. And this this Mr. Mom, Beetlejuice, everything he's done, I just love him in it. And back then, I guess, you know, whatever, 13, 14, I gave it 4.5 stars because I just loved this movie a lot back in the day. Every curse word was funny. I even like Piscopo's once lines all the time. I laughed a lot. Watching it a couple of days ago, I did drop it to exactly what Dave gave it, 2.5. I didn't. I lost something. Maybe I was just older, wiser, smarter. I don't know.
Okay.
But Keaton, him walking, chewing that gum, and just his facial stuff, I love him. I love Michael Keaton. And that's probably why I gave it still 2.5 stars. But everything else was kind of, even the mom. I don't know. It's like, man, I've seen those jokes. I've heard those one-liners. It's like been there, done that.
Mm.
But I still liked it a lot. I mean, Johnny Dangerously is one of Keaton's best.
It's a great performance.
Yes. Oh, yes. Love him.
Cool. All right, Matt? Yeah.
I probably gave it a 4 because I was looking so forward to it when I first saw it. And I remember dying at that health video and the farting passages and all that. This time around, I will say, as much as I'm shitting on it, the fact that it gave me new laughs that there's no way I saw these when I first got these jokes when I first saw them. And there's something to be said for that. So even though I'm not going to watch this again in all likelihood, I will say it was at least a 2-star revisit for me. It did give me some genuine laughs and seeing new things in it that there, like I said, no way I would have seen 30 years ago is something. So I give it a 2 this time around.
Okay. I have to say, personally, probably would have given it a 5 when I first saw it, because I did adore this movie. And for a while there, when I first found it in the $5 bin at Walmart years ago, I was so excited, and I brought it to work, and I remember being so pissed off because somebody stole it.
Oh, jeez.
And I was
stole it or threw it out?
Stole it. Oh. We had a love of bad
someone
movies.
Someone forgot to throw this in the trash.
No, it definitely got stolen.
Is there room in the trash? No, it's full of Highlanders.
It was that and a copy of Krull were gone. And
Krull.
And so years, like a couple years ago, I think I found another one in the $5 bin, but it was down to $3.
20% off the $5 bin.
And honestly, I was so happy to find it again. I was like, and I didn't really crack it open until we watched it this time. So obviously I really cared about it that I needed to watch it right away. But I have to say that it's not the cat's pajamas like I thought it was when I was a kid.
Cat's pajamas. Cat's
the bee's pajamas. Knees.
It's not the bee's knees like I thought it was when I was a younger. But I did have quite a few chuckle moments, as Matt can attest to. And I did sing.
Oh, my God.
I had forgotten about the Weird Al song at the beginning, and I sang with it every single lyric. I forgot
that. Put down the chains, hold on, listen to me.
No. Not that one. I would have to say I probably give it a 3. It lost a couple points because, it was a little eh. But I have to say I still enjoy this movie. Maybe not rabidly like I did when I was a kid, but I do enjoy this movie. And I think in that way it holds up for me, that it's still a decent movie for a cheap chuckle, you know?
Yeah.
So, we all gave it almost the same score.
We did. It dropped a few, but that's about it. You know, like two points here and there, but it still holds up.
Yeah, I think it's still, if you're going to look at something from the 80s that's not, well, I guess it's dated, but it's not really dated because it's not really the 30s. But it just, there's something about it that's fundamentally just funny. Awesome.
We were discussing early on in the movie, there is no way in hell you take this, no matter who you are, you take this script to a major studio today that they would ever take a risk like this on a movie.
No.
Yeah, you're right.
Nope, no way in hell.
Yep, they'd be like, oh, this hasn't been done before and it's not a reboot or a sequel? No thanks.
And there's no real cursing or nudity? Right. What the hell? No. Cool. Then let's go to our top 5 list.
Yes.
So,
bring it.
So the top 5 list actually was a bit of a challenge for some of us.
It was impossible.
It was.
It was top 5 movies made by SNL alumni.
My God. All 810 of them.
There's a lot.
There is.
So let's start with Chris.
Okay. This was a big-ass list. I wrote down a lot of honorable mentions. Well, you guys probably have on your list, so I'll keep those out. These aren't an end. These are 5 movies that I just love a lot. Maybe not better than the other ones, but number 5, it's a shame he's no longer with us. I was a huge fan of Chris Farley. Tommy Boy. Because I wish he would still be here making more of these movies with David Spade. I love, that's like one of the originals when I used to, you know, watch SNL and then they made these movies. I watched Tommy Boy and I just loved it.
That guy in a little.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. We just watched that the other day. I watched it with my son. He's 12. So it's like, you can start watching some of these movies. And he was dying laughing at when they go into the one meeting and he's doing the whole thing with the cars on the guy's desk. He's doing he's doing a car crash, you know, and he's like, and the car's flipping and then the car's on fire.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and then the ambulance, he's like, the ambulance pulls up, Mima, Mima. And the guy gets out and he mimics with a cigar in his mouth and he goes, oh my God. My son was pissing his pants laughing at
him. It's a hysterical movie. I wish he was still here today. I love Tommy Boy. Love it.
It is so sad when people that are so talented die. Like we were talking about that with John Candy not that long ago. Like when those guys die, it just like you don't know those people personally, but it is just so freaking sad. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
My next movie, number 4, is probably the first one I've ever seen him in. And I remember seeing it as a midnight. And I remember, I'm laughing now about it. I remember the guy on fire. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Stop looking at me, Swan.
Adam Sandler, say what you want. He's funny as hell. and Billy Madison, everybody, I think everyone our age loves that movie, no matter what. And the first time I saw that with you guys at midnight, man, him burning, him just pointing, laughing hysterically, I left like 20 minutes past that.
Yeah, you did. I remember that.
I couldn't breathe, you know? I was pissing my pants.
Chris Farley again.
Yeah, yeah, another, yeah, shit. Another Chris Farley.
That
yeah.
Veronica Vaughn is one piece of ash.
number three is, now these are like all neck and neck here. Number three, one of my favorite comedians ever, Eddie Murphy. I picked his most obvious, Beverly Hills Cop. The classic, can't go wrong with Axel Foley whatsoever. Number two, I know some people hate, I think, I don't know if Dave likes this movie at all.
Does it have Jimmy Fallon in it?
That's number one, Taxi, but no. Number two, I don't know if you like it. I love this movie, and part three will never be the same without Harold Ramis, the first Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters, Bill Murray, come on. You can't go wrong with Bill Murray in anything.
The flowers are still standing.
Yes. Everyone quotes this movie left and right, and it's fantastic.
I will quote Bill Murray himself to answer that you can't go wrong with him and say Garfield.
He's not really in it. You might hear his voice.
You have any regrets, Mr. Murray? No, maybe Garfield.
Yeah. Larger Than Life? Is that the one with him and the elephant?
The elephant, yeah.
Dennis Leary? No, that was Dumbo Drop.
No, that was Dumbo Drop.
Dumbo Drop. Yeah. Operation Dumbo Drop. That's right. Number one, I will bet my left testicle that this will be, oh boy, this should be on Dave's list as number one.
You can bet that something should be. There's no losing that bet. It's not, but it should be, so I keep my nut.
That's right. That's why I'm doing it.
I'm holding on to that nut. Like grim death.
And I think it's on Matt's number one. It has to be. No other comedy is better than this. It stars a bunch of SNL people.
I'm going to say it's probably not. I'll give you this preface so you're not disappointed. It's probably not on my list, but I did a variation on my list. So it's not because it's not good, if I'm guessing what movie you're going to say.
Number one, Kenan Thompson, Fat Albert.
Oh, never mind.
Strawberry Dattuzi.
It's Caddyshack. That's all I'm going to say.
Thought you were going to say Vacation, but Caddyshack's probably a better choice.
Vacation is on my honorable mentions.
Okay,
so I never saw it. It's about hockey, I think.
It's no, it's not on my list at all. But I subcategorized all my five through one, so that's why. Because this was too fucking hard to do.
It was so hard. This list was incredibly erect.
Christy, you made it hard.
Sorry. Don't be sorry. I mean, I know.
That was supposed to be a joke.
Chris already had a hard time getting it up today. Getting up today. What is it?
Yeah, he said he couldn't get it up, or he finally got it up when he was talking about his computer. He never said the word computer in any of his messages.
Yeah.
I didn't mean my computer.
Oh.
It's up now, though.
Your computer?
It's not leaking, though. My computer.
Leaking? You see a doctor.
That's not normal. Great. Awesome.
Great.
Let's move on.
That's my list.
Moving on. Awesome. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
Matt.
What?
Let's hear your list.
Okay. All right. This was, I said like seven times now, this was a hard list to do. So each of mine are on this list. Like, they're the best of a subcategory of a movie with a Saturday Night Live person in it. So I think, I don't know that this is necessarily my five through one top favorites, but these are something to narrow down that insane list. So I'll just start off by saying, I think this might be one of the most underrated Saturday Night Live cast members and underrated comedians who should be working more. And I think one of the most underrated Saturday Night Live alumni movies of any of the lists we're going to do, and that is Dirty Work with Norm Macdonald.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
What?
This is not a movie I imagine being mentioned in the 20 that would be mentioned.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just shocked. I never thought about that.
Okay. Well, That's why it was so difficult, and I had to make these like subcategories. My number four is the only, well, as obviously with the name Neo-Zaz, I'm a huge Zucker, Abram Zucker fan. It's the only Zaz movie that stars a Saturday Night Live alumni cast member, and that is John Lovitz in High School High.
I remember that poster.
With the afro.
Yeah, yeah.
My number three was on Chris's list, and it's the only, of all his movies, the only one I actually like, genuinely like, and it's Billy Madison, Adam Sandler. Otherwise, I can't watch any of his other movies.
Really?
Well, maybe Happy Gilmore, but Billy Madison for sure I can watch again.
Just watch Happy Gilmore last week. He even in his bad movies, makes you laugh.
Not me. Yeah. Not me. Number two is one of the only, I guess you would say, classic Saturday Night Live movies. It's actually the only direct spinoff I have on my list, and that is John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd in The Blues Brothers. The number one, a movie that I've probably mentioned on every other episode of The Greys, it stars six, or not stars, but has six cast members that are, at the time, some are present, some are past, and some are future, and that is This Is Spinal Tap.
Oh, yeah.
I knew that was going to be on your list. Yeah, yep. I knew that was on there.
So that's my top five with subcategories.
So you did a nice job of that. You made it a little easier for yourself by categorizing things the way you did.
Yeah,
that was,
I guess,
well done.
Oh, thank you.
Dave?
All right. Has anyone mentioned that this was difficult to do?
Yeah, right.
No, but it was fun. I'm glad that you did this, because like Chris and I are talking today, it would have been easy to make a top 50.
Oh yeah.
Like, but it's that's the fun part about doing this, is you got to whittle it down. And just because this is the list today doesn't mean it's going to be the list tomorrow. Like, these things like change constantly because there's so many good ones, because some of the most talented people to ever be on a television screen or a movie screen came from that show. So you're talking about the cream of the crop here. My number five, I wanted to pick people through various stages of the show's run. And Chris and I argue a lot about Saturday Night Live now. I think it's awful now.
And you're right.
I think it's unwatchable.
Saturday Night now.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, the state of Saturday Night Live now is about as bad as it's ever been, I think. And we've been watching it. It started in 1975. We were little. But you could go back and watch things from about the early 80s on. I mean, I've studied this show my whole life because it's been like the greatest thing on television. And I really, Chris and I argue all the time about Jimmy Fallon. I think he was really one of the starts of the downfall of this, the Jimmy Fallon, Horatio Sanz, bad writing era, where they knew all they had to do. They didn't have to write a good sketch.
They just had to break.
They just had to make they just had to laugh.
Yeah.
I hate that. To me, like, that would happen from time to time in sketches. Sandler would laugh at Chris Farley. He was laughing at Chris Farley because of the performance. It wasn't that the writing was bad. He just couldn't stop from laughing at his friend who happened to be hilarious.
Right.
And that would happen from time to time. When you try to watch it with those other guys, it was almost like, we don't have to write a good sketch. We can blow this up halfway through and it's going to be funny. That, along with all the, like, I know there's always been pre-filmed segments. It's called Saturday Night Live, but there was always commercials and things, even going way back. It seems like more and more the show is pre-filmed.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think all this stuff started to happen around the Jimmy Fallon era. So that's why I hate him so much. But I did want to pick someone that I think has a lot of talent from around that era. And the person that I think is insanely talented is Jason Sudeikis.
Yes.
He's very promising. And my number five is Horrible Bosses.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see the new trailer in part two?
No, I saw it's out. I haven't seen it.
I saw it today on Tammy. Yeah. That movie is, I find that movie phenomenal. It's not just because of him. I mean, Charlie Day's amazing and all those other people in it, but I wanted to pick somebody that at least, so I don't sound like an old man like, you know, everything new sucks and, you know, all the old stuff is good. I mean, he to me is a really talented guy. So that's my number five, Horrible Bosses. Number four is Analyze This, because I think Billy Crystal used to be one of the funniest people on the planet. He wasn't funny for a long time, and he's starting to be funny again now. And I was thinking,
he was one of the funniest people, and then he was. Someone gave him the opportunity to host the Oscars, and something went horribly wrong for a while there.
Yeah, I don't. That happens to some of those guys.
He was funny in the Oscars, but then that was it. It's like, I don't know if he took himself too seriously or what, man. But dang,
yeah,
he just got unfunny. But you're right. I think he is finally crawling back up.
He's rebounding a little. My son likes this Parental Guidance is on a lot. It's not a great movie, but he's more like Billy Crystal now than he has been for probably like 10 years. But I loved Billy Crystal. And to me, that's his funniest movie. And De Niro's hilarious in it too. The writing in that movie is so good. So that's my number four. Number three is Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
I kept trying to put it on my list, but then I think I just assumed or hoped someone else would put it on there, so I didn't have to shoehorn it in, because that is a great choice.
It's an instant classic, and he's made a lot of great movies, but I don't think anything will ever be as good as that. And there's a lot of, I tried to also pick things, I was going to pick things that had several Saturday Night Live alumni in them. And there's a lot in that. He's in that David Koechner, I Have Loved Since Day One. He was only on Saturday Night Live like one season.
Yeah. He wasn't in that Oddball season.
No, he was not.
No.
The Randy Quaid year.
Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah. That was a weird year.
Yeah.
Chris Parnell's in it. Ben Stiller's in it. Ben Stiller was a cast member. And I went back and forth with putting Ben Stiller movies on here. He was only on, he was never a featured cast player. He was always like, also with Ben Stiller. Yeah. You know, he was like one of those guys. Like, he was on around when, like,
Guido Sarducci.
Yeah, like when, like people like that were. Silverman, what's her name?
Sarah Silverman
was in that same boat. She was on around the same time. So I didn't necessarily go the Ben Stiller route because I love him. But he's even in Anchorman. So it's like
you mean like Bill Murray?
What's that?
You mean like Bill Murray? That's how he always was. Chris?
I'm saying at this fight.
Oh, okay.
Larger than life?
Huh? I just try to bust Chris's balls. That's all.
But number three then is Anchorman. Number two, I kind of went along Matt's route, and my number two is Best in Show.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Because there's a lot. I mean, Christopher Guest and Michael McKean was a cast member, and even Harry Shearer did stuff on Saturday Night Live. I don't think he was ever officially a cast member, was he?
He was at least for one season, yeah. Maybe more, but at least one that I know of.
Yeah. The thing with Martin Short in the pool, the synchronized swimming thing. I mean, that's classic.
I'm not a strong swimmer. I know you.
You're not angry with him. You're just saying, hey, you. I know you. So, for the same reasons that Matt had, this is Spinal Tap. And my number one is Caddyshack. Not only the greatest Saturday Night Live alumni film, I still say is the greatest comedy of all time with two of the most major cast members who hated each other's guts.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll save those stories if we ever do Caddyshack on here. And Brian Del Murray's in that too. And he, I don't know if he was ever officially a cast member on Saturday Night Live, but he was always around. He's always around in everything.
You pick up that blood.
Yeah. So Caddyshack is the greatest comedy ever made, and it goes right to number one on my list here too.
How much is it going to suck when they announce they're going to remake that one?
Well, as much as it sucked when Caddyshack 2 came out.
Yeah, true.
Jackie Mason, I'm going to buy this golf course.
That was the worst sequel to the best comedy, you know?
And then, oh, Dan, what a poor use of Dan Aykroyd in that movie too.
Yeah.
If you pull out the arrow, can you suck out the blood?
Yeah.
Is there any money in it for me?
Awful.
No. Awful.
I went back and forth. You know, when we talk about some honorable mentions, I don't want to spoil anybody. I didn't spoil Christie's list, but the Chevy Chase factor in my list was looming heavy, so I didn't try to go Chevy heavy.
Do you know what? I'm shocked it's not on your list. Is someone else you love? And I'll wait until she's done because I thought he was going to be on your list guaranteed, but I'll wait.
All right.
Well, that's an awesome list, Dave.
Thanks. I can't wait to hear yours.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So, my number five is going to be The Three Amigos.
Oh. That's one, Dave, I was shocked down your list. It really was.
Three Amigos. Love that movie. My number four, love him or hate him, I have to say that I know I saw this movie multiple times, and that would be Wayne's World.
Yeah. I was mentioned.
In college, I loved Wayne's World. My number three would be Blues Brothers.
Nice.
My number two, and when you said that our lists will change every day, and even as I look at this now, my list is not what I would do like now, and I did this about an hour ago. But I still love these movies. Number two for me is 1941.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I've only seen that once. I remember liking it, but I've never seen it again. And that was decades ago.
I actually, for some reason, was into a thing about watching the non-popular Saturday Night Live movies. Like, I saw Continental Divide several times. But 1941 always stands out, especially with the Ferris wheel. And when they think they're being attacked. it's a really funny movie to me. My number one, and this is only because I have just an affection for it when I was a kid. And when I saw this on there, I was like, oh, though I don't care for Chevy Chase now.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite movies when I was growing up
was... Oh, my God. I think I know what it is.
Foul Play.
Oh, no. I thought it was Modern Problems.
No. I like Modern Problems, too. But Foul Play, every time it would be on, I'd have to stop and watch it with Goldie Hawn and Chevy Chase. And it's so incredibly bizarre. Chevy. Like the.
I'm a goddamn good-looking man.
But it's...
That's Modern Problems. Sorry. Wrong movie.
The thing is that he's actually the straight guy in this. Goldie Hawn is the one that gets all the situations because I don't know if you've ever seen Foul Play, but I may be the only one. But the whole thing is that she knows there's a plot to kill the Pope and there's an albino and there's all this stuff happening and nobody believes her.
Sounds like Da Vinci Code.
Kind of.
Or Hudson Hawk.
But with a lot of comedy.
Could be swinging on a star.
But I don't think I've ever seen Foul Play.
It's kind of funny because just Goldie Hawn is like, did you, like, everything happens to her and she sees all these things happen and nobody believes her and they completely clean it up so nobody sees it. So nobody believes her through 90% of the movie. And then at the end, finally, Chevy Chase realizes, oh my God, she's...
Oh my God!
She's not crazy.
You know who I'm shocked, Dave, is not on your list? Steve Martin.
He's still on Dave's list.
Steve Martin was not a Saturday Night Live alumni.
Yeah, he was a host, but not a member.
He was never on.
No,
he was never a cast member.
Featuring.
No, he wasn't even a fan featuring.
No, he was. He was a host and just like frequent contributor, but he never was a cast member.
Never knew that.
Nope.
Huh.
That's my list.
Yay.
Yay.
You guys have ones on that I never would have thought of, even like the, you know, like in all these movies. Not that they're good, bad, or indifferent. Like, just like you guys came up with like some curveballs.
That's right.
Keeping it real.
Keeping it real.
I don't even know what that means.
And the Wayne's World thing. I was trying to think, like, I was trying to go through the cast members and think, like, what's their best movie?
Yeah.
Like the Eddie Murphy thing, like I know I love Eddie Murphy, but there's no Eddie Murphy movie that's good enough to get in this top five for me. Like to me, he's best on a stage with a microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's one of the greatest stand up comedians ever.
I'd have to cheat the list and say like Raw or Delirious, which are concert movies.
If I would have thought of that, I probably would have put Delirious, you know, like maybe that would get in the top five. But nothing that he's acted in is like ever like sets my world on fire. Like to me, he's the best stand up.
Well, there's Haunted Mansion.
That's true.
Dave.
Yeah.
The Bowfinger is pretty funny. Hey, Laker girls.
Well, that was on my short list. I have that to me. That's his best. Like I was trying to go through him. Like Bowfinger is Eddie Murphy's best movie to me because of the dual roles and the writing of that movie. And Steve Martin helps a lot, but And even like Mike Myers, I think his best movie is So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Yeah.
Like better than Wayne's World.
Wayne's World and Austin Powers, I saw them and I'm like, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed them when they're out, but I just have no interest in watching either of those again. So I can't put those on a list.
Yeah. It was hard to whittle this down.
It was.
Because I had a bunch of other stuff, like Chris said, on a short list, and it's like, you had to make cuts, and it was hard to do that.
Yeah, when I started the list, I mean, immediately, it's like Caddyshack, Vacation, Ghostbusters. Yeah. I mean, it was Stripes, bam, bam, bam. And I'm like, oh, this is impossible. And then I'm like, oh, well, I got to put Blues Brothers in here, but what am I going to take out? And I kept thinking of stuff to add and nothing to take out. So then I had to start doing what I did. I had to start subcategorizing.
I have down here Iron Man.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, he was in the weird year of Saturday.
Yeah, he was in the Dennis Quaid,
Michael Hall.
Was Dreyfuss on then?
No, the Charlie Rocket.
Yeah.
Oh, David Addison's brother. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave.
That's how I know him.
Was it? Tim Kazurinsky, I think, was on there.
Oh,
they only kept like two people, I think. Oh, no. I think you were right, Dave. I think Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on there because I think only Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Gary Kroger survived that year.
There was a weird thing. I remember the end of that season when it was like that oddball thing, and Lovitz was on. It was Lovitz and maybe like Dana Carvey or something like that. And the last episode, it was like really like. It was really mean. The last episode and the last sketch of the season, they had Lorne Michaels take all those guys in a room. And like at the last minute, he went in and he was like, Dana, John, come out here with me. And he locked the door behind him and they set the room on fire.
Oh my God.
I remember that.
Yeah. Oh God, I remember that too.
Yeah.
And that was their way of saying, you'll never see these people again.
Oh, cast is dead, yeah.
Yeah, and next season when we come back, it's going to be Lovitz, Carvey, and then all the other people that joined that cast, like Phil Hartman and Victoria Jackson and Kevin Nealon and all those people. It was like, and they even had Don Pardo like, who will survive the fire? You know, and it was like Robert Downey Jr. and Anthony Michael Hall running around like in flames.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's like really like dark.
Yeah.
And I remember the following season, the premiere, Madonna hosted, and she's like, she starts off with a thing like, I have a letter from NBC execs about last season. And she opens it. She's like, it was all a dream, a horrible dream, like a Dallas joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. They really.
If you extend it to those guys, though, like Chris and I were talking about it, like you put the Avengers on this list and you could put the Breakfast Club on this list. You put Tropic Thunder on this list. Ben Stiller and Robert Downey Jr. are both in it. Like, there's all kinds of great, great movies that those guys did. But people don't think of them as being Saturday Night Live cast members.
Right. I don't, at least. Yeah. That was, you could go on forever with this. And I was. And I was like, I need to stop.
Yeah.
I got to stop.
Well, that sounds like we have pretty much wrapped up all our thoughts on that. Because, I mean.
Beat Johnny Dangerously to death.
We did not beat him to death. So that's all I've got. Thank you so much for listening to the Gradies. But before we leave, we do have somebody who needs to pick a movie, and that would be Dave.
That is me.
So
all right,
Dave,
so you.
What are you subjecting us to?
What is that supposed to mean?
What Stallone movie are you subjecting
us to? Do I smell Stallone?
I don't like what you're insinuating.
I'm not insinuating.
You know, I've sat here.
I'm saying it.
Where's my time on this friggin' Skype call? Where's the time, Matt?
2 hours and 18 minutes.
I've been sitting here talking to you for 2 hours and 18 minutes. It's been nothing but a gentleman and complimentary to you.
Oh, yes.
And now you're going to come at me with this. You're coming at me guns hot.
Guns hot.
My guns are hot.
All right, I'm just kidding.
Like Sofia Vergara in Miss Jenny Kills.
Now, with the threat of Rhinestone always looming.
I know. The sword of Rhinestone is hanging over my head.
You guys have been doing this with the tagline. I'll give you the tagline and then let you guess. Is that how you like to do it?
Sure.
Okay. This tagline sucks. You're not going to get any information out of it, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. And it's adventure doesn't come any bigger.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Harold the Duck.
They're both good guesses, but not Time correct. Bandits. No.
Damn it.
I will add the year. 1986.
I'm afraid I know what this is now.
Why are you afraid?
I don't know. You and your choices.
What is that supposed to mean?
And you give me shit. You...
Romancing the Stone.
Ooh, no. That's a good guess. Damn it.
All right. Are you?
Is there any quotes that you know from the movie or no?
There's tons of quotes, but if I give them to you, especially if I do it like the guy, you'll know it instantly.
All right, hold on. Is it Lee
Phillips?
Adventure doesn't come any bigger. Is the guy still alive?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Does he make movies still today?
Yes.
Okay.
It's an hour and 39 minutes. Does that help?
Is it what kind? Action, romance, comedy?
Let's see. How does IMDb? This? IMDb puts this in the genre of action, adventure, comedy, fantasy.
Oh, everything.
Was the lead actor famous in a TV role before this?
No.
Ooh.
This genre thing is pretty well done by IMDb. This covers it all. Action, adventure, comedy, fantasy.
Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
No, that's a good guess. Oh. And Sting's in that.
Adventures in Babysitting.
No.
Is it? Oh, it can't be this.
Chris, you just had the opportunity to meet the director of this film at Wizard World Philadelphia.
All right, John Carpenter?
Yes.
Big Trouble in Little China.
That's correct.
Oh, I love that movie.
That's a great choice, Dave.
That is a great choice, Dave.
That's, yeah. Yes, it is.
The way they describe the movie on here is, yeah. An all-American trucker gets dragged into a centuries-old mystical battle in Chinatown.
This is great.
This
is
really great. Pisses me off to no end.
And I just watched this a couple weeks ago with my son. Since he's older now, he can watch this stuff. And I'm more than happy to go back to that well as many times as need be to do the research and bring this to the fine listeners of the Gradies.
This is awesome.
That's great. I love this movie. Sounds,
I look forward to that. So, folks, look forward to our next episode hosted by Dave.
Happy New Year!
Where we will review Big Trouble in Little China.
I eat filet mignon 7 times a day. My bathtub's filled with Perrier. What can I say? This is a life. I buy a dozen cars when I'm in the mood. I hire somebody to chew my food. I'm an upwardly mobile dude. This is a life.
This is Jack Burton in the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
It's a pretty amazing planet we live on here, and a man would have to be some kind of fool to think we're all alone in this universe.
There is a hidden world where ancient evil weaves a modern mystery.
What's going on here? Is this some kind of...
magic. The darkest magic.
They call it Little China.
Finally, we shall bring order out of chaos.
It's where Big Trouble was waiting for Jack Burton.
Who?
Jack Burton. Me.
Jack.
Jack.
Jack!
They told him to go to hell.
You make one move.
And that's just where he's going.
Somebody, I don't care who, tell me what is going on.
How are you gonna spring us?
I have no idea.
There are many mysteries, many unanswerable questions, even in a life as short as yours.
My destiny rests in your capable hands.
Hey, I'll do my best.
Oh, God, is this really happening?
take Cracker Jack timing, Wang.
One, two, three. We may be trapped.
Total concentration.
Safety.
Yeah. You ready, Jack?
I was born ready.
Way to go, Jack.
Jack Burton's coming to rescue your summer.
Hey, what more can a guy ask for?
20th Century Fox presents Kurt Russell in John Carpenter's Big Trouble in Little China.
It's on the reflexes.